Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 435. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Finishing up the shortstop position today. I already did shortstop prospects last week with Jeff Ponce. If you missed that, go back and check that out. And we're doing the dynasty side of things in this episode, and I have another great guest with me. He is a dynasty content writer for Pitcher List, CEO of the Four Seam Fantasy Substack at M_SKI22 on Twitter. Mr. Martin Sokolsky joins me. Martin, how's it going, bud?
Doing well, Cross. Thanks for having me on again. It's always nice to be with you. And I think it's like my fourth appearance on the show. So I think it's my most frequented visit that I've had of anybody, any of the shows that I've done. So I appreciate you having me on again. Let's get to talk some shortstop, so pretty excited about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I always enjoy having you on. On a handful of days out in Arizona for the always awesome first pitch Arizona event put on by Baseball HQ, and it gives us a little bit of warmth here. And you know, during the winter months, you know, we both live in northern states, and it's both been, you know, both states have been pretty cold and not you know, not baseball weather, but we get to talk about baseball, so it kind of helps a little bit and gives you that warmth feel that, you know, baseball is right around the corner and spring training is, what, about three and a half weeks away for the most part. We're maybe even a little bit less than that for pitchers and catchers reporting. I think it's like the 10th, 11th-ish, something like that. I forget the exact dates, but we're getting close, man. It's 19th of January right now as we're recording this, so
it's getting there.
As is this shortstop position, as you mentioned, you know, it's always loaded. You know, prospects were loaded as usual, dynasty as well. I think we both probably have in the vicinity of like 18 to 20 guys that are all in our top 100 overall. So it's gonna be a fun position. Let's get right into it here. Let's start with our personal top 10 rankings at this shortstop spot for dynasty. Who are those 10 guys for you, Martin?
Yeah, so I've got Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Connor Griffin, Francisco Lindor, Kevin McGonigal, Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, Bo Bichette, and J.J. Weatherholtz.
Awesome. And for me, I have Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Connor Griffin, Zach Neto. Kevin McGonigal at 5, then Zach Neto at 6, Francisco Lindor 7, C.J. Abrams 8, Trey Turner 9, and Jesus Madé in the 10 spot there. So fun little, you know, the top of the rankings here. It's a fun little mix of players. You got the, you know, some of the prospects, like, you know, like Griffin, like McGonigal, like Jesus Madé, et cetera, Weatherholt even. Then you got some of the older guys that are still up there. You know, the Lindors, the, you know, the Trey Turners of the world that are still just pumping out elite fantasy seasons as they get into their early 30s here. But let's start with Mr. Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, we all know Bobby Witt Jr. is the stud. He's my number one overall. Moving in the fences, that'll be fun for him this year. Hopefully a few more home runs for him. But Ellie De La Cruz coming off a, you know, it's kind of weird to say that it might have been a disappointing season for most, you know, De La Cruz managers this past year. You know, but 22 home runs, 37 steals, 102 runs scored. It's still, given what we saw from him in 2024, I think that it might have fallen under the underwhelming, bucket here. He had 25 home runs and 67 steals in 2024. So I think people were thinking that or even a bit more than that. And first half of the season, he was kind of on pace to kind of even go bigger and better than the year before that. He had 18 home runs, 25 steals before the All-Star break, 4 home runs, 12 steals, and a 236, 303, 363 line after the All-Star break, which kind of coincided with some injuries he was dealing with. So Martin, he's looking at the entirety of De La Cruz's 2025 season. What do you take from it? You know, what was important? What are you kind of brushing off? And just, you know, what are you expecting from him moving forward?
Yeah, you're right. It was a really weird season. I think that it started off looking really promising because he was making some improved contact in the spring, and something I wrote about a couple times last spring about the things he was doing, or at least the gains that he seemed like he was making with contact. And he ended up doing well with that. I mean, he gained 2% in zone and 3% overall. He still had a 10% barrel rate. The EVs were fine. And I mean, the strikeout rate cut down by 5%, which, you know, reflects that the contact skills were better. But that power outage he had for, it was like 70 games where he had one home run in 70 games. That's just insane. Like, that's just not something that's going to happen very often for a player with his caliber of quality of contact and the way that he hits the ball, launch angles and all that good stuff. So he definitely was hurt for sure. There was definitely something bothering him. But again, still a 264 average is a career high. He had a career high in runs at RBIs at 153. I mean, there was things that still went right. I mean, yes, it could have been bigger. He could have easily gone 30-30. But at the end of the day, it's still a good season for Ellie. And I think we know what's coming still. I think there's still more gains to be had. I think he's still maturing as a hitter. And if you look at it, I mean, if he goes, you know, say 270, 35, 40 with 180 combined runs and RBIs, I mean, doesn't he have a case to be the number one shortstop in fantasy and number two overall behind Shohei right now? I mean, that's kind of what how I view Ellie. And I'm always hesitant to put Witt ahead of him just because the upside is just so high. But again, the floor is the difference there. Witt's floor is much higher. So, but
yeah.
If he puts together that stat line, it's hard to argue that he couldn't be the number one shortstop in Dynasty. So,
yeah, no, I think he absolutely has it up. We've already seen, you know, a 25-67 season. He's one of the best athletes in baseball. So I won't be surprised if another 60 steal seasons in order, or at least, you know, a few more, you know, 50-plus steal seasons. And you know, the quality of contact, well, it's not like super top-of-the-scale elite. It's still, you know, really good quality contact, you know, across the board. It's above average, maybe even, you know, plus, you know, hard hit rate around 45%. You know, barrel rate's been above 10% each of the last 2 years. You know, average EVs has kind of settled in around 91, 92 miles an hour. And obviously he has a phenomenal home ballpark to hit in, but a little bit of the issue there, you know, angles haven't been the greatest. Only a 9.8% pull air rate and a 48.8% air rate last year. Pull rate was decent, though it did drop from the previous year. But yeah, if he can, you know, kind of get back to where he was earlier in his career with those angles and get the ball in the air more consistently, I mean, 30, maybe even, you know, like a 40 homer season wouldn't surprise me, but I feel more like in the 30s is definitely possible. So yeah, 30 plus, 50 plus season out of Ellie is absolutely possible. And then you mentioned some of the improvements he made in making a little more contact, and he's still below average both in zone and overall, but it's not like terrible. I mean, these are doable given, you know, the power and speed that he brings. He can still hit for a decent average. And obviously, you know, Great American Ballpark is a big BABIP boost as well. So I feel like as long as he keeps him in this range, I think he's fine. Obviously, I wouldn't mind even more improvements there, but even where he is now is fine. So yeah, I mean, he's still the clear number two. Like, for me, it's like clearly Witt number one right now. Like you mentioned, you know, the higher floor keeps him up there. And then Ellie's my clear two. And then Gunner is my clear three for now. You know, another guy could be jumping up into the mix for now. But yeah, these top three for me are pretty set in stone right now as we enter 2026. So yeah, I'm not worried about Ellie at all. People are like, oh, you know, look at what he did the second half of last year. I mean, he was playing through that quad injury. It was pretty well documented that he was not 100%. I'm not sure why they didn't shut him down. I know they were kind of in the hunt for a bit, and that's probably why. But yeah, I get a feeling we're going to see a pretty good bounce back here from Ellie De La Cruz and get back up to probably nearer to 2024 levels. But the next guy here that could jump up into the mix, and I already talked about him a decent bit on the shortstop prospect episode, rightfully so, but I want to kind of look at him in comparison to these established major leaguers, and that's Connor Griffin. I mean, I think we both had fourth, right? You had him fourth as well. Yes, so we both had him fourth. So our top four is the exact same order. And I have him overall right now 23, which for a guy that's 19 who just got the AA ball, that might sound crazy. But, I mean, as I talked about with Jeff Ponce, he has number one overall fantasy player upside. And he has Bobby Witt Jr., Ellie De La Cruz type of upside. So, you know, how do you kind of, you know, when you get these generational talents like a Connor Griffin, Martin, like how hard is it, you know, to not push him like super high in rankings? Because even though I have him 23, I want to go higher. I guess how high I am on Connor Griffin. So kind of how do you balance side versus the inexperience when you do these rankings with a guy like Connor Griffin?
I don't really worry about the inexperience. I mean, I'm right there with you. I've got him 22 overall. So we're in that same boat. I really feel like he's just that good. He's just that good. And I know that one of the talking points that, you know, I had on this was that I already have him in my top 25, which people think is aggressive. But again, like you, I'm confident in that. And you mentioned Bobby Witt Jr. and someone can call old takes exposed, because I'm going to say it right now, Connor Griffin will be the next Bobby Witt Jr. and maybe even better. That's the level of talent that I feel that he's got, the skill set that he's got. When you look at a player with, he's only 19, and he's just doing things that he just shouldn't do as a 19-year-old, and he's just getting better. And you see the socials about him putting in all the work and all the things he's doing with his swing and all the things he's doing with his body, and he just has it. He's got that it factor. So for Griffin, I would love to put him three in this. I really do. I think that he will be better than Gunnar in short order. But he's still got to do it at the major league level. And that's why he's not, you know, where he's at. But I know one of the things you wanted to talk about was where to take him in a startup draft. And so I actually did a mock dynasty startup draft, 14-team mock earlier this offseason, and I actually made the turn with Acuna at 14 and Griffin at 15.
Ooh,
and I really loved it. So,
yeah.
And I don't think it really sacrificed anything with my team build, because my first 12 picks were Acuna, Griffin, Yuri, Devers, Dominguez, Schwellenbach, Josh Naylor, Noelve, Joe Painter, Johan Duran, and Grayson Rodriguez. So, I mean, he's just that good. I really believe in everything that was said. I heard what Ponce said the other day. I mean, if a guy like Jeff Ponce is talking you up as well, he's seen a lot of guys come through in his day. I mean, this is a good player. And I think I'm hoping that he gets that chance to start for them opening day. I think he's going to win the NL Rookie of the Year regardless of when he's up. But I'd love to see him get a full season in the majors, because I think he's just that good. He's just that ready to go. So,
yeah, it's, you know, we don't get guys like this very often. Like, he is a true generational talent, like not just like a great talent or uber talent. Like, I think it goes good talent, great talent, uber talent, generational talent. Like, he is a true generational talent that we just, you know, you see like once a decade or something like that. So yeah, I haven't had a chance to see him live yet. Unfortunately, he was only in AA for a little bit and they didn't play anywhere near here. So yeah, I don't know if I will, because I don't think he's gonna be in AA. Even if he does go back to AA for the, you know, start of the season, I can't imagine it's long. And like you said, like, he might even get even the majors to start the season, which is just crazy to think about. Like, if you said a guy, even with his talent, you know, who was drafted out of high school in 24, didn't play in the minors at all in 24, started the year in 2025 with zero professional plate appearances, in low A, and then you say the next year he was going to be starting for the big team. Like, man, I mean, no, there's no way. What is this, like, you know, Ethan Salas all over again or something like that? But, you know, someone that just got pushed for the sake of being pushed. But no, like, he earned, like, he dominated every level, and he got better. Like, we talked about it on the prospect episode, how, you know, he made more contact as the year went on, walked more, struck out less, while still hitting for power, while still being an absolute menace on the base paths. Like, he didn't, you know, sacrifice something else to work on that. He was still killing it everywhere while making improvements in, like, the one area where there was, like, a little bit of concern when he was drafted. So, yeah, it's, yeah, like, it's hard to, like, it's hard to keep my expectations for him in check. Like, I'm trying not to be too crazy here, but with him, it's hard not to.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is, like, if you look at the numbers on him, I mean, he scored 117 runs in the minor leagues. Like, that's a lot of runs for in the minor leagues. I mean, 94 RBIs, that's a lot of RBIs in the minor leagues. And it's 122 games. So it's not like he, you know, he didn't play 162 game season. He only had 484 at-bats. So the things that he's doing with the 65 steals and 21 homers, 23 doubles, this is a video game for him.
And he got married this offseason, too, I saw. So there's a lot of good going on in that Griffin family right now. So, yeah, and I know his dad, who interacts with me on Twitter, is a coach as well. I think there's a lot of good athletes, you know, and good people in that family. So, yeah, it's definitely a kid you want to root for sure. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. You know, Pittsburgh, man, Skeens and Griffin, that's a really two generational talents right there. So hopefully they can build around that and give the fans of Pittsburgh a winning team here. But moving on here to a guy that's about, what, 13-ish years older, 14 years older, 33-year-old Mookie Betts, who has been, you know, a gold standard in the fantasy game for, you know, the better part of the last decade now between, you know, the Red Sox and the Dodgers, is putting up, you know, high-end talent year after year, and it's just some great numbers. But, you know, last year was the first year where, you know, it just kind of didn't feel like the Mookie of old. And even 2024, he didn't miss some time, but it was still, you know, a really good overall line for the, you know, the time he was there. But last year, he was, you know, played a whole season pretty much, 663 plate appearances, and it was not a bad season by any means. But when you compare it to what we have come to expect from Mookie, it was, you know, a bit of a down year, but still had 95 runs, 20 bombs, 82 RBI, nearly as many walks as strikeouts. Only had 8 steals, though, which was the lowest he's had in any season since his rookie year in 2014 with the Red Sox, where he only played 52 games. And he had the worst slash line of his career. He had the worst batting average of his career, the worst on base, and the worst slug right across the line, 258, 326, 406. So again, that's not terrible by any means, but we had become, you know, accustomed to, you know, first round or at least like top 2-3 round production from Mookie. But hey, Martin, you're, you know, both. Like, I think he's still, like, people that are writing off Mookie Betts, I think, are doing it way too soon. I think they're still, you know, maybe he's not top 25 overall player anymore, but I think there's still a really good player there, a potential bounce back season to be had. So I'm still in on Mookie Betts. And if I was a contender right now, I think he'd be a decent buy right now because the price tag has come down a little bit. But again, I'm not expecting him to bounce back to like 2022 levels or anything like that. So where are you at on Mookie Betts these days?
Yeah, I had the same thing written down here that about Betts is, if you're in the competitive window and you can buy low on a guy that's still productive the way he's been productive, I think you take your chances, especially if you're in like a, you know, 1 or 2 year window where you just really need to make that slight improvement to get where you need to get to. You could do a lot worse than Mookie Betts. I did see earlier that he's going to retire apparently after 2032 season, which is like his age 40 season. I don't like him for that long, but I do like him for now. So, but yeah, like you said, last year, 20 home runs, 82 RBIs, 95 run, with 8 steals, that's still a really productive player. The quality of contact started to fall off a little bit in 24, but he had the wrist injury. And then last year he had that like typhoid fever thing or whatever that whatever those things that whatever used to kill my oxen in the Oregon Trail game, that's what he had. He got so sick.
Like dysentery or something.
Yeah, yeah. You have to cut him some slack for that. He's not a big guy to begin with. And then to lose the, you know, 15, 25 pounds that I could afford to lose, but he can't, you know, that's not going to help a guy that's built like that. But for him to still come out and produce the way he does, I mean, his plate skills are outstanding. The walk rates and strikeout rate last year was almost identical. It was around 10%. You know, he's still going to have incredible team contacts. They just keep getting better. He's still going to play every single day. I mean, yeah, he's 32. Yeah, it's going to start going downhill. You know, it's not going to get better. Let's put it that way. He's not going to get better. But, I mean, for the next two, three years, he's still going to be a very productive player. He's still going to be a top 15 to 20 shortstop, you know, at the end of the day. And, yeah, I'm still buying bets wherever I can, especially if someone's going to, you know, give him away or sell him for even 50 cents on the dollar. I'm taking the chance, especially if I'm competitive. So every time we've written this guy off or tried to write this guy off, he just comes back and does something that we never expected him that he could do. So I'm not going to give up on him now.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's far too soon for that. Absolutely. And yeah, he's probably hitting like what, second, right behind that Shohei Ohtani guy, right in front of some combination of Freddie Freeman, Kyle Tucker, Will Smith, and then you still got, you know, Muncy, T. Oscar, all those guys too. So he's going to probably have, you know, guys on in front of him, guys driving him in behind, like really good bats driving him in behind. Like that might be one of the best 1-4s in the history of baseball. I mean, it's easy. You know, we'll see what happens when the, you know, games start actually being played. But on paper, man, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, and Tucker as the 1-4 is just phenomenal. So, yeah. Contending team, I'm still absolutely in on Mookie. I mean, I think he's one of the best athletes to ever walk the earth. I mean, most talented athletes, not physically imposing, but the fact that he's, you know, phenomenal baseball player, Hall of Fame caliber baseball player. You know, he bowls. He could be, you know, he was an all-state wide receiver. You know, he could dunk a basketball. Like, there's so many good things Mookie Betts can do. So this is not a guy I'm going to count out yet, especially when you look at contact skills are still elite. You know, zone contact rate over 90%, overall contact rate around 85%. Now, you mentioned the quality of contact that's gone down a little bit, but it's still decent quality of contact with really good batted ball angles. He's always been that guy that gets the, you know, the high air rate, the high pull rate, the high pull air rate. You know, doesn't strike out much at all. You know, even had a career best 10.3% strikeout rate last year. And I'm still banking on at least a couple more seasons of pretty good production from Betts, but yeah, the ranking will probably continue to slowly go down, but I don't think he's going to crater and fall off a cliff either, which I think is what some people are kind of saying on Twitter from what I've seen. So yeah, I'm not there. So yeah, definitely a good buy low right here on Mookie Betts for a contender. All right, let's go into the next set of 10, which I think is a really fun set of 10. I mean, this top 10 obviously is fun because it's all studs, but this is where, you know, these 11 through 20 is where you get some interesting breakouts, some more young prospects, another good mix of players here. So, Martin, who do you have 11 through 20 in your dynasty shortstop rankings?
Yep. So I've got the talented trio of teenagers at 11 through 13. So Mate, DeVries, Walcott. And then I've got C.J. Abrams, Zach Neto, Corey Seager, Willie Adames, Aiden Miller, Trevor Story, and Colt Emerson.
Yeah, several. I think half that top or half that 10 was just prospects there, which just shows how loaded this position is in the minor leagues as well. Though, you know, a few of those guys will definitely move off, but yeah, definitely a fun set of 10. So 11 through 20. For me, I have Leo DeVries, 11, Jeremy Pena, 12, Geraldo Perdomo, 13, Bo Bichette, 14. That looks like he's moving to third base this year for the Mets. So we'll see how long he maintains short spell eligibility. 15, I have Corey Seager. 16, J.J. Weatherholt. 17, Mookie Betts. 18, Sebastian Walcott. 19, Willie Adames. And 20, I have Jacob Wilson. And just put it in perspective, Mookie Betts, who we just talked about, I have him 17th, but I still have him 79th overall. So still a top 100 player for me. But let's go to Zach Neto here, a guy that I had 6th overall. And you had at 15 overall. I just want to see, you know, where you're at here on Neto. You know, back-to-back 20-plus seasons from him in 2024 and 2025. 23 home runs, 30 steals in 2024. 26 of each in 2025. You know, though the average has been, you know, around 250, OBP around 320, so not like a super sexy slash line, but, you know, counting stats have been pretty solid. 24 years old. So what are your thoughts here on Zach Neto moving forward here, Martin?
Yeah, like you mentioned, it's something that I don't like Neto necessarily. I don't have him as a top 10 guy like a lot of people do, which it's funny because when we started talking about doing this show, I sent you my initial rankings and I had Neto at 6. And the more I dug in, I'm like, I just don't love it. So, but like you said, everybody's kind of all clumped together in this tier. I've actually got Neto inside my top 80 overall. So like you said, for context, it's not like I hate Neto completely and he's, you know, outside my top 350. This is a top 80 guy for me. So it's just a really deep position with a lot of really talented guys. The issue I have with Neto really is it comes down to plate discipline and just the plate skills in general. The contact rates are, they're okay. Batting average is fine, but the plate discipline's really bad. He doesn't walk, that which hurts because that's going to cut into his stolen base potential. I still think he's a 30-30 guy at some point in the near future. I think the power is really good. And I think that, you know, obviously he's going to run, but there's a team context element too. Like the Angels are terrible. Sorry, Scott Burks. I know you love the Angels, but I don't. So that's part of it too. We've also had a little bit of injury concern with him as well. So for me, it's not that I don't like Neto. I just don't want him in that upper tier or upper echelon of guys. I think there's a lot more upside with some of these younger prospecty kids, at least early on, that I like more than I like what I see out of Neto. I just feel like they're going to hit for higher averages while also offering the same power and speed combinations. So.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, even though I do have Neto 6th overall, I mean, I feel there's a better chance that he's ranked lower than 6th for me this time next year than higher. Simply because, you know, a lot of things you mentioned, you know, the plate discipline is a concern. Like you look at some of those, you know, the sliders for plate discipline, when they're in the blue. I mean, he's generally like bottom third in a lot of the, you know, chase, whiff, walk, strikeout rates are all, you know, kind of not terrible, but not good either. They're definitely below average. In fact, he's, you know, around the 71% overall zone. I'm assuming an overall contact rate, but 81% zone. And that's not terrible, but, you know, 5-6% walk rate. It's kind of where he's been all 3 years, 27% K rate. So I feel like the floor is a little bit lower than most of the, you know, elite guys, so to speak. Well, not having the same upside as those guys that we talked about that are ranked ahead of him. But, you know, obviously there's a good power speed blend here, you know, 46% hard hit rate, 14% barrel, average EV of 91 miles an hour. You know, it's a solid runner as well. So I feel like kind of where he's been at in that 25-ish range, I think is fair to expect moving forward. I mean, I hate to say that, you know, what you see from a 23, 24-year-old the last 2 years is what to expect as he gets older and, you know, closer to like that physical prime that we talk about. But just looking at the skills, like the skills kind of back up what we've seen. I mean, it's like, all right, he's a 250-ish hitter, doesn't walk a lot. So there's the lower OBP you see, you know, above average power speed. There's your 25-25. So I kind of feel like that's pretty fair to expect, you know, for him like as like a baseline moving forward. And I do agree, you know, maybe you see him get up over 30 home runs for a year or two. Yeah, I think the power's definitely there to see that. You know, he's got good angles as well. Air rate, it was about 64%, 46% pull rate, 24% pull air. So good angles as well. That definitely helps. I think he's really good. I just don't think he's like that stud shortstop that, you know, he's not Ellie, Gunner, those types of guys. And I do think another reason I could bump him down is, you know, you start seeing, you know, maybe, you know, Jesus Mate, or at least in my ranking. I know you have some of these guys ahead of him already, but for me, I got, you know, maybe I start ranking Mate ahead of him or DeVries or, you know, Weatherholt, you know, these types of guys that could jump up, you know, a good bit over the next year or so, especially if they you know, debut later on this year. So, yeah, I like Neto, but I think most people are higher than even me on Neto. No, I don't think he's a stud, but I think he's really good. Just, you know, like you said, it's an absolutely loaded position for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at this time next year, I could easily see him in the top 10 as well. I mean, looking at it right now, I mean, Bobichet, I've got it at 9. Probably could easily make a case to just, you know, to push him down lower. Betts is going to start to tail off a little bit. We talked about that. Trey Turner's probably going to tail off a little bit as well. So there's definitely a path to him being a top 10 guy. I just feel like the floor might be a little bit lower because of those play discipline skills. There could be seasons where, you know, he's going to hit, you know, 215, 220 just because he's not making enough contact. And that's concerning for me. So,
yeah, no, that's absolutely fair. So kind of maybe a similar line of thinking here with this next player who I think generally is thought of as, you know, like a top 7 or 8 shortstop for fantasy right now, but you have him ranked in the teens, and that's CJ Abrams with the Washington Nationals. He's always been one, Martin, that's been just weird for me to evaluate because, you know, I think I've always been generally a little lower than most on Abrams, but, you know, you can't really argue that the production on the surface has been pretty good. Then you look under the hood and you're like, there's nothing that, like, you know, stands out with Abrams under the hood. Like, even that elite speed is kind of, you know, he's more of a 70th percentile sprint speed, you know, at this point. If you just looked at his sliders, I mean, obviously don't evaluate like this, but just to put it in perspective, if you just look at his batting sliders at the top of his Savant page, none of them are red. None of them are even pink. They're all, you know, light blue or even some dark blue. It's all like 57th percentile or worse. So, like, there's no standout tools here, but, you know, he does just enough. And with good batted ball angles, which helps, he's been, you know, kind of putting up right around the, you know, 20 homer, 30 plus steal year each of the last 3 years while hitting around 250. So we've kind of had a, you know, pretty consistent overall season to season line from him, even if it, you know, is pretty up and down within each season, as we've seen, and even sometimes where he got benched because of that whole staying out till 4 a.m. at the casino thing a couple years ago. So where are you at right now on CJ Abrams here? Still only 25 years old, but just a really difficult player to evaluate for me, at least.
Yeah, I agree. And they're basically, I mean, I've got them 2 spots apart in my overall rankings and 1 spot apart in my shortstop rankings with Abrams slightly ahead, but it's a very similar profile. I mean, they just have different strengths, right? So Abrams has a little bit better, in my opinion, a little bit better stolen base potential. His contact skills are quite a bit better as well. So I think there's a potential that he's going to hit for a higher average on a more consistent basis than Neto. But on the flip side, Neto's got, you know, the more power. He's playing in a ballpark that's probably more favorable for hitting home runs as opposed to what Abrams is dealing with. But I mean, beyond that, on, you know, at the surface, similar batting averages, the counting stats are fairly similar. Team context, I mean, everyone's team context is better than the Angels, so we're going to give Abrams the plug on that. But, I mean, they're both getting to the pull side power, like you mentioned. I think they both had pull air rates over 20% last year. They're getting to the same, you know, the same final line, just going about a different way. So, for me, that's why I've got them right next to each other, because they're basically, for me, the same player. And, again, it's not that I don't like Abrams, because I think he's a top 80 guy as well for me. So it's just one of those things where it's just personal preference, and giving him a slight edge with potential for the higher floor with the stolen bases. I think he's a guy that could easily steal 50 bags without any question. We've seen him do it, already get to 47, and he's getting to the home run power, which, you're right, the sliders are really bad, but he's doing it. So I mean, if Perdomo is going to hit 20 home runs, then I don't see why Abrams can't. So,
yeah, I mean, and he's already kind of shown that he can. So what's to say he can't get up? I don't think 30 is in his future, but, you know, maybe you see some mid-20s on your 24, 25 homer season out of a CJ Abrams. You know, I think that's possible. And I think you can see even more than the 31 steals. I mean, again, sprint speed is, you know, good, not great. And it's kind of ticked down over the last, you know, few years, but, you know, like, he was 90th percentile sprint speed, for example, in his 2022 rookie season, and kind of around 80th percentile in 2023 and 2024. But, you know, so maybe you can see a little bit more power speed. But even if he is what he is, that's still a top 100 player. If he's giving you, you know, 80 to 90 runs, around 20 home runs, 30 plus steals, and keeping the average around 250. I mean, yeah, I think that's still a top 100 player with the upside for more. And it, again, it helps. You see these guys that might not have elite quality of contact but have good angles. You know, that definitely helps. He's been above a 20% pull error rate each of the last 2 years, with an error rate around 60% and a pull rate 43, 44, 45%. So that definitely kind of helps aid the you know, kind of middle of the road quality of contact that we see from him. So yeah, I think, you know, what you've seen from him is still good, top 100 player, a little bit of upside for more. You know, I'm not sure if he's ever more than 250-ish hitter, but yeah, still a good player. But yeah, he's always been one where it's like, I feel like every year, while it's still good, end of the year, you're like, ah, man, he could have done more. This is kind of how I feel with T.J. Abrams. Yeah. But
a lot of those guys
now is still. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, you're fine. I was gonna say a lot of those guys in this range are. I feel like they're gonna have that similar outcome where you just feel like there's a little bit more that they could do. I mean, we talked about that with, you know, with Mookie Betts. What's he gonna do this year? And you know, you look at guys like, you know, Kevin McGonigal. A lot of people have him ranked really high. I personally do as well. There's a lot of questions about what his power is gonna be like. I personally think his power is going to be fine, but there's a case that could be made that he's not going to have good power because of the ballpark he's playing in. And because he's, you know, the EVs aren't probably going to be, you know, at that elite level, but there's a lot of guys that get it done with that, without the elite EVs and, you know, and the elite barrel rates and things like that. So, I mean, Abrams and Neto both, I mean, you kind of know what you're going to get from them, right? You're going to get that mid, you know, that 250-ish batting average. You're going to get the power. You're going to get the speed. And sometimes you just have to bank on the production and just go from there. So,
yeah, no, for sure. And with McGonigal, I do think the power is going to be there. I mean, he's smaller in stature, but he packs a punch at the play. I've seen him 6, 7, 8 games, something like that, including, you know, a few in Double A late in the season last year, and then a few out in the Arizona Fall League. I saw him at 2 home runs in those games, and I think he had a couple doubles and even a triple as well. So, yeah, I think he's maybe not a 30 homer guy, but I think like 20 plus for McGonigal, even in that ballpark. But yeah, I do agree that ballpark does limit, you know, power to some degree, and not a very favorable park, but I think McGonigal, you know, I think he's one of the high floor guys in baseball for prospects. I mean, I see like 20 plus, 10 plus, you know, high average, high OBP, just like one of the, I think he's one of the highest floor guys I've seen come through like the minor leagues in, you know, the last decade or so. Yeah, I think he's definitely very, very safe, very, very polished, very, very advanced. So that's why I have him so high. I mean, it's funny talking with Jeff Ponce about these two. It's like the top two shortstop prospects, Griffin, McGonigal. It's like very, very different profiles, but one is super high upside, the other one super high floor. You know, it was fun to compare those two. But yeah, I have McGonigal top 30 overall right now too. So you know, speaks to the volumes of what I think about him too. All right, next up here, one of the, you know, probably the biggest. Like if there was a biggest breakout award handed out at the end of the season, I think you could make a strong case that this next guy would have won it in 2025, and that's Geraldo Perdomo. With the Diamondbacks, who feels like he should be older than 26. Feels like he's been around for like a decade at this point. But, you know, 5 seasons in the bigs, 26 years old, and last year just set career highs basically everywhere. New career highs in games played, plate appearances, at-bats, runs, hits, doubles, triples, home runs, RBI, walks, you know, et cetera, steals, everywhere. All the slash lines as well. It was a 290, 389, 462 slash line in 161 games, 98 runs, 33 doubles, 20 bombs, 100 RBIs on the dot, 94 walks, 27 steals, only struck out 83 times, so more walks than strikeouts. This is a guy coming into the year where I think some are clamoring for Jordan Lawler to be starting at shortstop over him. Yeah, I'm not going to, you know, rehash that, but I might have been one of them just because I liked Lawler a good bit at the time. But I don't think even the biggest Perdomo supporter could have predicted a 20 homer, 27 steal year for a guy that had 14 home runs and 34 steals in 1,420 plate appearances entering the season. know, elite approach, elite contact. You know, even with the 20 home runs, the power metrics still weren't great, even though they did tick up across the board. But Martin, I think, you know, we get a question. Is 20 home runs probably the career high we see from Perdomo? But given the, you know, given the skill set that he has, given the breakout, given the age, and how are you valuing Perdomo moving forward, and how much of that breakout are you buying right now?
Yeah, so I've got Perdomo, I think, at like 22nd for shortstops. I think I'm just looking at I've got him 154 overall. So not a bad player by any means. I definitely don't buy the power. I'll tell you that for a fact. I don't buy the power. If you look at the sliders like you're talking about with Abrams, his are the darkest of blues. His look like something out of the Frozen movies. But the quality of the level of contact that you mentioned with the contact skills, very, very strong. The batting average, I think, is here to stay. I think there's no reason he can't hit, you know, 290, even over 300. The way, you know, he runs pretty well. His sprint speed isn't great, but it's good enough that at least he's going to make a small impact with the speed. But I definitely think the floor is really high for batting average, and with his steals, I don't believe in the power whatsoever. The counting stats, though, I think that there's a chance that those could, you know, they're going to be a lot closer to what he had in 25 than what he did in homers. I don't think that homers is going to get, I don't think he'll even get to double digits again this year, but I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just completely wrong. I mean, the Diamondbacks clearly thought he was the guy. I mean, Lawler has been on the cusp of being a thing for a long time, and I know you're a big Lawler guy. I am not, or at least I'm not any longer. I was. But they obviously saw something in Perdomo because they gave him that big contract. And that pretty much said to Lawler, you're either going to have to move somewhere else or you're going to have to, you know, produce at the level that we know that you're capable of. So, so Perdomo, I mean, top 25 shortstop for me. I know that people have him, you know, as high as, you know, 12, 14, 15. I'm not saying that that's wrong at all. I am saying that if I'm an owner and I've got someone that's valuing him as a top 15 overall shortstop, I'm probably going to make them pay the price to take him from me, and I'll reap the benefits with whatever I get back. Because I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely fair. And he's a difficult one just because we didn't see, you know, really any fantasy relevant production from him. He wasn't even playing, you know, full seasons either. It was, you know, like 495 plate appearances and 388, you know, single digit home runs, slash line that was just kind of, I mean, good OBP, but it was just kind of meh across the board. But I guess I'm a little higher on him, I think, than you are. I definitely agree with a lot of what you said, you know, but I do think you could probably keep it in like the 10 to 13 range for home runs, just given, I mean, I'll put that with a caveat, if the quality of contact stays where it is. I mean, again, still not great, but it's closer to league average, still below average, but not like terrible. If he keeps it there with the batted ball angles and just how much contact he makes, I think he can run into like 10, 11, 12, 13 home runs. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think he's going to sniff 20. I also don't think he's going to sniff 27 steals either. So I think even with some regression, let's say it's 12 home runs and like 18, 19 steals, which I think is fair. That's, you know, not super sexy, but if he is still giving you 90 plus runs, the, you know, the high average, the high OBP, you know, and a solid amount of RBI as well. I mean, you know, even if it's 80 plus RBI, you know, even baking in some regression across the board, I think that's still a pretty good player. It's more of a high floor player. It's not super fun, super buzzy. You're not like chasing upside, but you know, sometimes, you know, we have to have guys like a Perdomo on our team, whether it's redraft or dynasty. We can't always have every spot being super, you know, fun and buzzy, you know, because oftentimes those guys don't pan out for one reason or another. So I think he's a guy that is kind of like that glue guy, you know, that, you know, good dynasty teams have to have sprinkled in throughout the roster, you know, and if you don't want to chase the high upside guys and pay the price to get those, I mean, I think you can still get Perdomo for a reasonable price tag. I don't think people are believing in him as like a top 30, 40 guys or anything like that. So, he's definitely a good player and obviously a really good real-life player for Arizona, given his defense that he brings to the table as well. So,
There's not really a big difference between him and, like, a Jeremy Pena type. I mean, you're looking at a pretty high floor for batting average. I mean, Pena's not going to hit 300 again this year either. I mean, let's just be honest. He's like a 270 guy. But, I mean, Pena's going to have a little bit more power than Perdomo. But for the most part, you're still looking at a similar profile. They're going to get their bags. They're going to hit for a good average. They're going to have good counting stats. So,
No, I like that a lot. I've always been a Pena guy just because he went to the University of Maine, so I got that connection with him. I'm like, hey, we don't have many good players that either were from Maine and or went to school in Maine, so whenever we get one, like right now it's like, oh, Jeremy Pena in baseball, and obviously Cooper Flagg in the NBA, the number one pick from this past year who's balling out right now. He grew up in Maine, so every now and then we get a Maine guy in some capacity, so I've always been rooting for Pena. But he's got to kind of flies under the radar every year, but good but not great player. So definitely agree with that sentiment. But before we get on to the next set of 10 here, I want to get your take just quickly on who do you think out of all these, all the non, obviously Lee Griffin and McGonagall out, so those guys that are in this range for the Weatherholtz, etc., Walcotts, who do you think has the highest upside? Like if everything clicks and they're hitting like 90th percentile outcome or, reaching their ceiling, who do you think has the highest upside of all these guys for fantasy long term?
Yeah, when you had this question on the outline, I was like looking at my rankings, I'm like I really think it's Aiden Miller. And I know that seems crazy because he's a really good player though. I mean, the power and speed are really legit. His contact skills are trending up better than the other guys I have in this group. So for the record, to repeat it, I've got Mate, DeVries, Walcott, Miller, Emerson in this group. So of the five, I think Miller's probably got the highest upside. We know that the ballpark is going to be favorable. It's the best of all the five players in the group. I think his power is the best. He's physically built better than anyone else in this group. He's like 6'4", 210. I mean, he's already a big kid. Some of these guys, they've got that wiry strength. Mate and DeVries and Walcott have that wiry strength. Emerson's more of a pure hitter. But I think if you're just looking straight up at who could do the most damage as a fantasy asset, I think it's Abe Miller.
Man, I like that. And Jeff Ponce raved about him in the prospect episode too. And real quick, I love when anybody uses the term wiry, because I just think of the kicker from the Replacements movie when Keanu Reeves, he's like, wiry, trying to get the wiry. I think of that scene every single time. It gives me a good chuckle. But, I like that call on Aiden Miller, too. He's a guy that I dropped down, as I mentioned the last episode. I dropped down way too far when he was struggling midseason. But you look at it, it's good quality of contact, good contact, decent approach. Speed is there, too. Maybe he moves to third. We'll see. But, he's a really fun player and a guy that is ranked very highly now for good reason. Yeah, I like that call. See, if I had to pick one out of the non-Griffin McGonagall range, I think if the power gets to the point where I think it could, I think, Jesus Mate has a case. With DeVries, I kind of wonder, how much does DeVries run? And that's the X factor for him long term, but Aiden Miller could be right there as well. And Walcott's a tool shed too. He's kind of raw and still hasn't put up the big, numbers in the minors. But there's a lot of really good shortstop prospects right now.
There are. And I remember you guys when you and Clegg used to talk about how the adjustment, right? The adjustment from level to level. And I remember listening to all those episodes about Jackson Chourio. And by no means am I comparing the two of them as players because they're not the same. But if you remember, Chourio used to do the same thing at every level. He'd get there, he'd struggle, he'd figure it out, and then he would take off. And it's just like Aiden Miller does the same thing. He gets to the level, he struggles a little bit, and before you know it, everything is just complete 180 from where it was at before, and he's just off like a missile. So it's just one of those things where remember that about Miller if you're going to rank. If anyone's listening and wants to hear my opinion, remember that when you're ranking guys like Aiden Miller, if they struggle a little bit at the beginning, that doesn't mean that that's what they are. So, and I think that he's proven that time and time again. And I think that he's going to do the same thing at the major leagues. I think he'll struggle at the beginning, but then once he gets going, this is a really, really talented kid. And I'm really excited to see what he can do. So,
yeah. And the, you know, the lineup and ballpark context would be pretty good. Mm-hmm. There's Citizens Bank, which is a beautiful stadium, by the way. I've been there a couple of times. I got some friends right outside of Philly. So I've been there, I think, 3-4 times. And I think every time I go, I see Aaron Nola pitch and he gets shelled. But I'm like Aaron Nola's curse. I swear to God. But, it's a beautiful ballpark. Nice, you look out center field, good view of downtown Philly. But, yeah, good ballpark. You know, obviously, Phillies have had a really good lineup with a lot of, you know, potential Hall of Fame guys on that team. And, you know, Schwarber's back, Harper, Turner, et cetera. So, yeah, I like that call a lot. All right, let's go into the last set of 10 here. We're going 21 through 30, which, again, still, I mean, it does fall off after, like, the top, for me, at least in the rankings, you start seeing some bigger, you know, gaps between players. But the top 30 for me still goes to like right around 240 overall. So that's still pretty good for that, you know, 30th player for me is number 247 overall right now. But who do you got in the 21 through 30 spots here, Martin?
So I've got Dansby Swanson, Geraldo Perdomo, Jeremy Pena, Ezekiel Tovar, Luis Pena, Colson Montgomery, Kalen Culpepper, Anthony Volpe, Mason Wynn, and I hate myself for this, but Xander Bogaerts.
Good old pal Xander Bogaerts. One of my favorite players of all time. Yeah, he's another one where he's, what, 32-33 now, which feels weird. Because I remember little baby-faced Xander when he came up the year we won the World Series in 2013, which feels like eons ago, which kind of it kind of was. Now it was, 12, 13 years ago, but it feels weird that Xander and Mookie are now like 32, 33. It's just, as someone that saw them come up through Double-A here with the Portland Sea Dogs, it feels weird that they're now, you know, veterans and quote-unquote old in baseball. But so for me, 21, I have Aiden Miller, 22, Cole Emerson. So two guys that are probably going to make a nice impact in the majors this year. 23, Colson Montgomery. 24, Luis Pena. Though I do think he does move off the position here. Probably the second base, but we'll see. 25, Ezekiel Tovar. 26, Dansby Swanson. 27, I have Trevor Story. 28 is Jordan Lawler. 29, Anthony Volpe. And 30, Bryce Rainer. That's another prospect to end it off. But wanted to talk about a guy that I feel most people have higher than us. I mean, you didn't have him in your top 30 here. Where did you give me a little more ranking? So you had
I've got him at 33.
33, yeah. So just outside, and I have him in this 21 to 30 range. But I feel like if you like put a poll, he'd probably be more ranked in like the teens for most people, I think. And that's Jacob Wilson with the Athletics, another really interesting and just kind of polarizing profile because, you know, obviously he's already one of the most elite contact hitters in the game. Like he immediately was once he made his debut for the Athletics, 92% zone, 90% overall contact rate. He even has a chase contact rate of 85.9%. That's just like, that's higher than most people's in zone contact. So he just puts the bat on the ball. Yeah, he is aggressive, but you know, makes a lot of contact, but outside of the contact, it's like, all right, there's, you know, minimal power here. I mean, it's bottom barrel quality of contact. He's not a fast runner. I mean, he'll pop a few home runs just because he puts so many balls in play. They're, you know, few are bound to, you know, find the outfield seats there. He had 13 home runs and 523 plate appearances last year, but I just don't have him ranked super highly just because I don't like this type of profile in general. I think he's more valuable in like a points league for sure, but I don't see him hitting more than 13. I think he's more of like an 8 to 12 guy. There's not a lot of speed, more than a handful of steals, so it just really limits his appeal for fantasy. But what do you think here of Jacob Wilson? Are you intrigued at all by him moving forward, Martin?
I'm just not. I'm not a Wilson guy, and I've had numerous heated debates with people on Discord and things like that about Wilson. I get the love for him because he does things that we don't really see a lot of, right? He's an elite contact guy in a world that's, you know, guys are striking out at 30% rates on a regular basis. He's likable. I mean, he's a young kid. He's got the flow going. He's fun to watch defensively. He's fun to watch at the plate because he just doesn't swing and miss. But for fantasy purposes, it's empty batting average. I mean, last year, 311, 13 homers, 62 runs, 63 RBIs, 5 steals, and he finished 20th at the position. Like, that doesn't do anything for me. He's a good middle infield target. That's fine. He's going to get you, you know, that safe batting average floor. But, I mean, I'd rather have Carlos Correa. It's like the same player, only Correa is going to hit more home runs. I can't get on board with Wilson. I know a lot of people think I'm nuts, and I probably am. Maybe I'm way off base. Maybe I'll hit 30 home runs this year. Who knows? But the thing is I just don't see it. It's first percentile everything for quality of contact. I'm okay eating crow if I'm wrong, because – I've been wrong a million times. I just don't buy him. I don't buy it at all. So,
yeah, he just feels like this shortstop Luis Arraez, which is fine. And if you like Arraez, you'll like Jacob Wilson. I just don't. I mean, it's like a one category guy. I mean, yeah, he'll probably give you some solid runs scored. Sure, he had 62 last year and 523 play appearances. So, could he score like 80 plus this year? Sure, that wouldn't surprise me, but he's just giving you literally minimal to no impact in power and speed. Probably not going to be a guy that gives you many RBI, though he did have 63 RBI last year, which was surprising, but yeah, just the upside is limited. I don't think he's ever a top 100 player. If you're in points format, you know, it definitely gets a little bit of a bump there for sure, especially for leagues that, you know, minus strikeouts, because this guy just does not strike out. Like, what was the K rate last year? It was like 7.5%, which is just like insane.
Oh, he's terrible.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's terrible for him.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, what do you have in the minor leagues? It was like a 2.6% strikeout rate in his last in 2024 in the minor leagues.
It's like 4% for his entire career in college.
Just something stupid like that. Yeah. But yeah, I just, the upside is like, I can see him kind of hanging around being a top 20-ish shortstop, you know, maybe a fine, boring middle infielder for your team, but that's really about it for me. I don't really see much more upside there. So next guy, though, couldn't be more of a polar opposite from Jacob Wilson, outside of the fact that they're the same age. That's really the only thing they have in common, and they both play shortstop. There you go. Outside of that, the profile is very different. Colson Montgomery with the Chicago White Sox. I feel like if you combined like Wilson and Montgomery, you get like Corey Seager or something like that. But unfortunately, one has power and some questionable contact. The other one has great contact and, you know, little to no power. But Montgomery, it just went on a home run barrage after he got called up. And this is a guy that I've always been a little bit lower on than most. You know, I thought he was a decent but not great prospect when, you know, he was being ranked as a great prospect. But, you know, in 284 plate appearances with the White Sox last year, 239, 311, 529 slash line, and 21 home runs. So he was on, you know, by like a near 50 home run pace if you extrapolate that out over, you know, 650 plate appearances or so. You know, played in 71 games, scored 43 runs, drove in 55, and no steals. This guy's not going to give you more than a rogue steal here and there. But the power is really good. You know, but the question is, like, you know, can he get enough power to overcome, you know, some of the questionable contact and approach that he has? Can he be a guy that's, you know, even closer to being a starting caliber fantasy shortstop? That's kind of where I'm questioning. I think people are thinking he could get up to that range. I'm not so sure. You know, I'm just not sure he's more than like a 240, 250 hitter. And given that he has no speed either, I just don't know if he's ever more than like a power hitting middle infielder that's like a 240, 30 type of guy, which is still fine. That still can give you value, but I don't know, Martin. Maybe you think differently. Do you ever see Montgomery being a guy that can even be in the conversation for, you know, a starting caliber fantasy shortstop moving forward?
I mean, could he be? Yes, he could be. I mean, do I want him as my shortstop? Not really, no. So, I mean, apologies to our friend Mike Carter. But, I mean, Colson's kind of just keeping the seat warm until Caleb Bonnemer gets there for me. I mean,
I like Bonnemer too. Yeah.
I love Bonnemer. The problem is the quality of contact is really good, or at least it was last year, but the contact rates as a whole weren't great. For a guy who doesn't have great contact skills, he sure swings an awful lot. I mean, he's over 50% swing rate. We know that he's going to play every day right now, and he's going to hit in the middle of a lineup that's going to be better, probably a lot better actually this year, with a full season of Kyle Teal and, you know, Miguel Vargas is starting to come into his own a little bit, and they're going to be better. They're not going to be great, but they're going to be better. So we know he's going to play every day. So could I see him as a shortstop, you know, a starting shortstop in fantasy right now? Yeah. Yeah. I could deal with that. I saw him in Detroit last year a couple times. Physicality is there. He's a big kid. He's a really good athlete. We know about this from the conversations that you and Clegg had with him about the basketball stuff before and all that. But we know that there's also some lingering issues with his back. And again, those contact rates have me worried. So I do like Montgomery for what he is, which is, like you said, 240, maybe 25 to 30 home runs. I'm good with that. But in a position that's so deep, with so many guys that can give you four or five category contributions, he's just another middle infield or util guy for me. I can't see him being a starter unless you're in the deepest of deep leagues. So,
yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I think he could be a guy that's like in the 15 to 20 range long term, but I don't know if I see him rising to like top 10, top 12, especially with how loaded this position is. Now, if he, let's say, long-term shortstop and they end up moving, you know, Montgomery to third or something like that. All right. Could he be maybe a top 12 third baseman? That's not as deep of a position. Maybe. Yeah, I could absolutely see that. But yeah, I don't see it at shortstop. I can see he's a fine player. And even the contact rates, while they are below average, they're not terrible. It's 80%
really
zone.
Terrible.
Like a 69% overall. It's the fact that, you know, his batted ball angle as well, you know, having, you know, these batted ball angles, 63.5% air, 48.5% pull, 27% pull air, they definitely aid power, but they at times will kind of limit batting average. Like we've seen with Isak Paredes, where Paredes, even though he never hits for a good average, has really good contact rates, but the batted ball angles help him get more home runs, but limit that average. So I think that's kind of, you know, not exactly the same for Montgomery, but to a degree, limits the, you know, maybe he could be more of like a 250, 260 guy, you know, but he's probably going to be more in that 240 range given, you know, given the entirety of his profile. So, but even if he's 240 plus with 25 plus home runs, yeah, that's still solid. But yeah, I think if for him to be a starting caliber shortstop, he would need to be like that 30 plus guy for home runs, which he could be. But I think he'd need to be more like 260, 270, given that he's going to be a zero in stolen bases, which we don't see. I mean, Corey Seager is like one of the only exceptions of being a top 10 or top 5 shortstop without having really any speed impact. It's hard. So yeah. I just don't think he's that level of hitter. So, but still fun player. All right, let's end it off with a Yankee. Why not? A guy that is probably one of the more polarizing players. You know, two Red Sox fans ending it off talking about a Yankee. Let's, you know, go figure. Anthony Volpe, though, he's a guy that was, you know, top prospect and for the Yankees, a shortstop for the Yankees. We all know, you know, one of the most famous baseball players of all time played that exact same position. So just being the Yankee shortstop is already just, you know, one of the most sexy positions in all of sports. And he's had, you know, an okay career so far. It's kind of weird. It's like, you know, there's been some good, but the slash line is generally sucked, for lack of a better term. I mean, he had a 2020 year his rookie year, was very close to 2020 last year, 19 home runs, 18 steals last year. But the slash line, he's never hit above 243. That was in 2024. And in two of his three seasons, he's been under 220. He's never had an OBP above 300 and never had a slug above 400. He's generally been 280, 290 OBP, like 370, 380, 390. Slug OPS has been right around 660 all 3 years. So it's really an interesting profile where it's pretty, you know, it's a lot of good, a lot of bad. I don't know. do you have, you know, any faith in Volpe kind of being more than what he is now? Do you think there's more in the tank here, Martin, or do you think this is just kind of what Volpe is?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot more in the tank. I mean, I think we've seen the peak of each, right? I think we've seen almost 30 steals, and I think we've seen 21 home runs. I think that's probably about what it's going to be. There's not going to be any huge outlier seasons where you've got the, you know, the 35 homers and the 50 steals out of him. It's just not his thing. I think he's an okay player overall. I think he definitely could benefit from getting the hell out of that organization because I think that the pressures of being from that, you know, that part of the country, trying to fill in that position, you know, they were calling him the next Jeter when he was in the minors. I mean, that's a lot on a kid. I think he's only what, 24 yeah. still. So there's a lot that he's had to shoulder. And then he was hurt. He had the shoulder this year. So, I think he's already played himself out of favor there, which you don't want to be out of favor in that town. It's just never going to be successful for anybody. But if you look at some of the underlying stuff, I mean, it's starting to look a little bit better. He cut back his ground ball rate. It was back down to 40% this year, which is pretty good. And that's actually even more encouraging because he had the shoulder issue. And usually when you have a shoulder issue, you're not really lifting the ball very well. So I'm okay with that. The barrel rate was up to almost 11%, 42% hard hit rate. You know, the contact skills are actually pretty good. I mean, he only had a 10% swinging strike rate this year, which is pretty good for a guy that's, you know, mid-20 strikeout rate. So, I mean, there are things to like in the profile. It doesn't mean that he's a guy that I necessarily want to invest in. But if I can get, you know, 20 out of a guy with a 240 average, I mean, you kind of have to take it, right? It's your middle infield guy, obviously. You're not going to start him, but there's still some value there, and maybe he gets out of New York and just kind of takes off a little bit. So I still have interest in Volpe and Dynasty. I'm not going to run out and actively pursue getting him, but I think he's a guy that still has value. And yeah.
I think that's well said. I mean, you look at the profile and it's not terrible by any means. Yeah, there are some issues. I mean, you know, the approach, he's a bit aggressive, but still has, you know, around average or even a tick above average quality of contact. You know, the overall, you know, contact rates are not terrible. I mean, he doesn't have like a, you know, his worst whiff rate against any pitch type is 26.5% against fastballs. So the fact that he still makes pretty decent contact against all three pitch types, and overall he's around 75% contact. You know, the in zone is, you know, below average, but doesn't chase a lot, which helps. So yeah, there's still some decent metrics here. And you mentioned the ground ball rate ticking down, you know, slightly better angles, though still not the greatest. So yeah, it's a pretty mixed bag here overall. Do I think he can hit above 212? Yes, absolutely. Is it going to be above 250? Maybe not, but could he get back up to being like a 240, 250 guy? With maybe a low 300 OBP, and you know, everybody got it walks a lot, but it's like 6-7% walk rate. It's not like it's like, you know, 2-3% like we see with like a Tovar or something like that. So yeah. I think there's a little more in the tank. So maybe we see another 2020 year, or maybe we see a 240, 250 average. I just don't think it's going to rise really above that. So yeah, I do agree too. Like, you know, maybe he's could be benefited by getting out of New York and getting into a spot that has just less pressure, you know, whether it's a Miami or Pittsburgh. No, it won't be Pittsburgh because Connor Griffin, but you know, people get what I'm trying to say here. Just not New York, like not a big market, like not New York, Boston, Philly, Los Angeles, Chicago, you know, get them into, you know, like a mid market, small market, Tampa Bay, you know, something like that. Just, I think could do him some good here, but yeah, still some talent, but yeah, I don't see him ever, you know, ever being like a top 100 guy or anything like that. Kind of, I think he kind of is what he is with a little more upside in the tank, I think. Yep. But yeah, still only 24 years old. All right, that's going to wrap us up, though. You know, Martin, thank you so much for joining me. This is, you know, we could have gone another hour or two on this position with how many exciting names there are throughout, but we'll kind of cap it there. Now, before we get out of here, though, why don't you let everyone know what you got going on? I know you're cranking out the content, so what are you working on right now?
Yeah, it's been busy. We're doing team by team dynasty reports for or prospect reports for pitcher list. So I think I've got one more to go on that. It's the Mariners. That'll be coming out sometime toward the end of the month. Also working on my Substack is every day. It seems like I'm putting something out. About to start my National League team-by-team prospect reports for 2026 with updated rankings coming probably sometime in March. And then also working on a draft kit with Bubba and the Bloom over on their pod. Been putting out a lot of stuff for that as well. So, yeah, a lot of sleepless nights, but it's all fun and it's all rewarding, and I love doing what I do. So,
absolutely great stuff, Martin. Everyone should be following Martin and you know the work he does at Pitcher List and over on his Substack, and obviously you know Bubba and the Bloom, great stuff there as well. Again, find him on Twitter at @m_ski22. And you find me at Eric Cross MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. And I'll be back with you again later on this week to kick off the outfield position. But until then, everyone take care.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1,000,000%. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.